Hi, all. These are generally conversations between adults after the children have left the table. The language can be spicy, and the subjects can get saucy. So if you're ready, this is the Southern Fork. Unscripted kitchen chats, and also studio chats, with some of the most interesting voices in the culinary South. I'm Stephanie Burt, a food and beverage writer based in Charleston, South Carolina, who travels with her fork to write for a variety of publications, from magazines you might have on your coffee table to the website you love to visit for your favorite recipes. And I'm inviting you to come behind the scenes with me to get to know the people who make this Southern culinary landscape so special. I'm always hungry for the next bite, thirsty for that next sip, and ready for the next conversation. Let's dig in. The Southern Fork is honored to be presented again this year by Townsend Automotive in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. For more than 48 years, the Townsend family of dealerships has been a locally owned company built on service and connection with its customers. And their experienced team can walk you through the car buying process side by side from test drive to service oil changes and beyond. Townsend goes through a rigorous vetting process to make sure that every pre-owned vehicle adheres to quality standards. And right now, there's plenty on the lot to choose from in various makes and models. Visit TownsendHonda.com for current inventory, or if you're in West Alabama, stop in. Townsend Automotive salutes local entrepreneurs, from restaurateurs to podcasters, and they welcome you to be part of a community that does the same. Visit Maison in Charleston, South Carolina, any night it's open, and there's a definite vibe. One that pays homage to the best of classic left bank Parisian creativity without the slightest hint of nostalgia. That's a delicate balancing act, but Chef Vandy Vanderwalker accomplishes it through sheer will and his passion for a cuisine he's loved since he watched chefs on television as a child. He continued his interest in cooking throughout college, and when he graduated, attended the French Culinary Institute in New York. After working in a series of restaurants in New York City, he moved to Charleston where he refined his style, including as chef de cuisine at The Ordinary, then opened Maison 3 years ago. It's the home of sweetbreads with black trumpet mushrooms, galettes of shrimp and stone crab, and plenty of pommes frites, which I suggest ordering with a side of escargot. Welcome to the Southern Fork, Vandy.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, we're sitting in Maison during morning prep, and so this is one of my favorite soundscapes, as there's no music playing, there's no hum of people. It's just that quiet sound of large pots and pans and probably some delivery people coming in during.
Definitely some delivery people, but it is that moment of zen before all the craziness starts for the day, and it is a nice moment of silence and welcomed.
Yeah, well, you're not getting much silence these days, are you?
No, not much. With the sun and the other child being a restaurant, it's a lot, but it's totally worth it on both ends.
You and I have communicated many times through the plate over the years at The Ordinary and then definitely here. And we've said hello and chatted briefly, mm-hmm. but this is going to be, I'm excited about it because
totally.
It's a longer conversation than we've really had. I've also communicated my fandom for Maison and print more than a few times, but definitely last year in Condé Nast Traveler's Best Restaurants in Charleston. And I was excited before you opened it. How long have you been open now?
3 years as of 2 days ago.
So, all right. I knew it was close. I knew it was close. I was excited before it opened. And when it opened, not only is it just because of you and the crew that it really became an industry darling. I can always come here and see people I know, locals, industry folks. But I wanted to start by gravitating right to the style of food here, the French bistro. Because I feel the same way. Of all the things that I want to eat in a restaurant that I don't want to cook, it's this kind of food.
I agree with you 100%.
So why do you think that food folks are so interested in this particular thing? And I'd love for you to define your idea of French bistro,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I mean, people are drawn to French food because it's familiar. I mean, Americans, they get bridged the gap between French and American cuisine via Julia Child. She really kind of adapted and got people interested in French food. So after all these years, people are really familiar with that, and they know what the classics are. The idea behind Maison is I didn't have really a restaurant to go to and get this type of food in Charleston. I think it was a niche that needed to be filled. And I wanted to do something a little bit more updated, a little more modern. When you read a menu on the paper, it looks very French and very typical French bistro. But when you get a plate, it's got a lot of technique. It's got a lot of chef-driven kind of qualities and beautifully sourced food in a technically sound restaurant. And that's kind of really what I wanted Maison to be, and kind of give you a little shock. I believe you eat with your eyes first. So every single plate's got to be aesthetically beautiful. And then it's got to be absolutely delicious. If you can nail those two things, you're going to have repeat customers. Start coming in more often, you get regulars, and you can really start having fun with the kind of French concept.
Well, and it's nice because it changes seasonally. I mean, that's just the kind of food that you cook. And so why so many people gravitate toward the food that's being cooked in Charleston is that it's seasonally driven. And that technique, I mean, obviously you're a technique-driven chef, but how do you hold that line? I mean, you know, you can fudge a little bit with this kind of food, like you're saying. How do you keep that precision in a kitchen? Because it is precise. I mean, you have a crudo often, if not always, on the menu.
Pretty much.
You know, that's a precise dish that's really about technique and fresh. How do you keep all those people back there?
It's slipping and sliding. The biggest thing is being present and training from the ground up. If you have proper training and teaching the right techniques of what you're trying to, what the end result is, and through repetition, they can actually do it incredibly well. But being present and actually showing people how to do that. A lot of executive chefs have chef de cuisines that kind of train and follow the pathway of food. But I believe executive chef needs to be the forefront and be there and be present and teaching these young cooks how to progress cuisine.
Do you enjoy that part of cooking?
I do. I love training. I love creating new dishes right with the entire kitchen. They get to see the whole thought process. They taste every single step. And then we all sit down and kind of decide, is this good enough to make to the menu for a special, whatnot? But it is a communal kind of aspect of that sort. I mean, I drive the bus, but everybody's aboard and helping out.
Well, I also know there are some off menu it's really hard to write about this place because you don't have a menu online and we have to all follow on Instagram.
We do have a menu online.
Yeah, but it's not the current one.
it changes quite frequently.
It changes, yes.
I do. I get ideas and I just kind of spring on them. And if you don't jump on those ideas, your cuisine's going to fall to the wayside. And you lose kind of relevance. And relevance is something I really, really focus on. Being relevant in Charleston, being relevant French bistro and across the nation. It's kind of something that I strive for.
Can we kind of open that envelope a little bit? Because I understand we're speaking the same language, but what does it mean to be relevant as on the plate? I mean, you can tell when something's outdated, but you often, unless you're in the business, can't tell when something's super relevant.
It's a kind of chef-driven idea of what other chefs are doing in the country. And that relevance is trying to keep up that par of kind of pushing cuisine. Like I said earlier, Reed's is a classic French bistro menu, but it is much different. And we breathe a sense of modernity into it and lots of technique, obviously, that can be talked about. But that relevance is something that you got to strive for. It's progression of the cuisine. It's kind of trying to better yourself every single day.
How do you stay relevant outside of the kitchen? I mean, are you watching what other chefs are doing?
Inspiration. I don't take any inspiration locally. I don't look at any menus online or talk to any chefs. I don't like to steal ideas. Charleston's a really small community and everybody knows each other and you don't want to step any toes. I look nationally. Inspirations for Maison kind of came from like Frenchette and Le Coucou in New York City and Le Petit Trois in Los Angeles. Kind of three major restaurants that we look to. And Bouchard, there's a bunch of others, but those are the three I kind of loved. And then there's also small French bistros in Paris that I follow diligently. And they are just more cutting edge than we do at Maison. They can push the boundaries because that is, you know, it's Paris and that's the mm-hmm. you know, gastronomic hub of the world. So, mm-hmm.
And they have developed, not only is it gastronomic hub, but like you're saying, you have regulars and you can have a little fun with them.
Yeah,
right?
At first you start off with a little bit more pedestrian. And once people start trusting that, like, oh, I don't usually eat that. But at Maison, I can kind of break out of my normal boundaries and try some new different food.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is one of the places, and I will have to share with you this. I go out and try a lot of food. And sometimes I have a very unsatisfying, sad, kind of makes me a little angry meal.
Yeah.
And lots of times I need to come and get a palate cleanser at Maison. That's usually some escargot or... I mean, whatever you have, mm-hmm. But it's definitely a glass of wine or a cocktail and some escargot. And so I can always come and visit here. It's obvious that you take your job really seriously. You wouldn't be here. This is a owner-operator place. Who inspired you to start down this path?
I'm classically French trained. So that's kind of where I went with French cuisine. And then... working over the years, now I'm 18 years in the industry, worked a lot of very, really nice restaurants and kind of learned, but I always rooted in classic French cuisine. But the reason I started cooking is because of my mother. I would watch TV and watch a cooking show with her, and I'd say, Mom, I want to cook that. And we'd go and cook in the kitchen and cook it. And that was how I grew up. Sat down to a gourmet, delicious meal. I was eating skate wing and soft shell crabs.
Whoa.
At a very young age. Homemade meal every single night. And that's kind of what drove me. Mm-hmm. Is definitely my mother got me started. I was graduating college. I went to college for sports. It's like, what do I want to do? I knew I didn't want to sit at a desk. I didn't want to wear a tie. And those are the two things. I'm an incredibly active person. My mom's like, why don't you cook? And why don't you go to culinary school? And I was like, I don't know. I've never cooked professionally in my life. So 20 days after graduating college, moved to New York City, went to French Culinary Institute. And 18 years later, I'm sitting and talking to you at Maison.
One of the dishes here that you're most proud of, because you've cooked for other people, but this, I mean, in other people's concepts, this is yours. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the great hits that you feel have really come out of the kitchen here?
One thing at a French bistro that you have to love is pommes frites, French fries. And it sounds like it's a crazy thing to say, but we cut them by hand every single day.
Yeah, we can spend the rest of the time on these.
And then we double cook them in a full fryer full of clarified butter.
That really explains it.
That explains the whole thing. And there's not a lot of restaurants that do that. First of all, it's incredibly expensive. The end result is a slight butter taste, super crispy exterior with nice creamy interior, but you do get that hint of butter taste that is quite fantastic.
Yes.
And that is kind of one dish that I'll always stand behind. And we sell tons of them. We cut a case of potatoes every single day for our small little restaurant, and it works out pretty well. But it's the classic dishes that kind of root us, you know, the pâté de campagnes, the cold charcuterie program that we have and keep running. There's things that I can't get around town. Those are the things that I want to have at Maison. So mm-hmm. someone, if you're whether in the industry or you're just a regular diner, that you can come and experience it.
Mm-hmm. You also have a burger that kind of blows people away when you... And it has different iterations, different sets.
No, it's stayed the same.
It
over 3 years, I do not change a single thing about
it. Oh, well, I've only had it once. So every time I'm like, well, I'll never have that again.
No, we do it once a week. And we only do it once a week because we make every single thing for it in-house. We make a duck fat sea salt bun in-house just for that every single Wednesday. And we grind our own hanger steak chuck patty. We make a duck burger sausage, a duck sausage that goes on top of the burger, and then caramelized onions, Gruyere cheese, and then a garlic aioli. And then we top it with a sauce bordelaise. So it is a saucy burger, but it is very French. I'm big into double sauces. So the aioli mixes with the bordelaise, and it's kind of a really special moment.
Double sauces. Yeah, that's interesting. You know, in a world of editing, I mean, you worked at The Ordinary. It's about perfect, clean, organized editing. How do you know when you've not gone too far? And you're doing these classics. How do you get your own personality in there? Or does it feel that way to you?
I cook what I want to eat. Mm-hmm. And what makes me happy. I've been for years cooking what other people want me to cook, and be able to cook the food that I want to cook is, at the end of the day, it's all I want to do. And if the rest of the team doesn't like what we're doing, then we all have to, you just have to abandon it and move forward and trying to find something that everybody's excited to do. Redundancy is, it gets old in restaurants. So keeping it changing and always moving and always progressing forward and not becoming stagnant is really important. But having specials and keep on just changing the menu seasonally, it's difficult, but it's more rewarding, and it keeps everybody engaged, keeps everybody happy. And that's one thing that really, I really want to keep everybody happy. It's the biggest thing that I try to do.
And you've got a stocked kitchen. Like, in other words, you're not hurting for staff.
No, we've been very fortunate all the way through COVID and past. No, I guess we can say past, partially past, that we've kept a staff. The biggest thing is keeping a small restaurant. So it's manageable, sustainable. You know, if we lose one person because they're sick or for whatever reason, we can even easily step in and fill that role. So it works out really well.
Mm-hmm. All right, it's been 3 years. So what have you learned? Because I know this was something you wanted to do for a long time.
For sure. What have you learned?
I mean, how does it look?
It's not
different.
It's not easy. Yeah. But everybody knows that. It is rewarding. You got to push through the first year and a half, 2 years. And then the third year, I'd say 2.5 years past, you can start stepping back and looking at a more bird's eye view and kind of taking it all in and really appreciate how the work you've put in. If you don't do that step back, it will keep just weigh on you mentally. And you really need to just kind of figure out how to process all your thoughts about running a business, about progressing food, being relevant. You got to figure out a way to process all that. And that's really important for your mental stability and keeping all your employees happy and engaged.
It's a small place. How many seats is it?
We're about 60 seats.
Yeah, but it's packed every time.
Yeah, we're very fortunate. We're very lucky.
Yeah. If you're like a busy guy, I mean, and you've been in the kitchen 18 years. I've interviewed hundreds of chefs in this job and for many, many articles. I think I've done 500 pieces of edit.
Wow.
Since I went full-time freelance in 2015. That's a lot.
Yeah, totally.
I think it's 500 invoices. But anyway, a lot of people are wanting to get off the line. How do you feel about coming in here and actually cooking? I see you back there.
I still love it. I'm trying to step more farther and farther back, but I always get drawn to it. It is what makes me happy. One thing that is going to force me to is having a son, a newborn son. But that's something I want to step back for. But I'll never not be here all day prepping. I believe the one thing that makes a French restaurant successful is sauce work. Sauce work is the DNA of French cuisine. And I make all the sauces here, and I'm constantly making sauces. I love them, and it just makes everything so much better. It adds acid, adds moisture, and it's really important for French cuisine. And that's something that's done during the day and over multiple days. And I spend a lot of my time doing that. So to be in there, and if I know all the sauces are perfect and everybody's cooking with their heart and their best foot forward, the end result is going to be great for the customer.
Have you ever realized in any of your previous jobs that you weren't cooking from the heart? Have you?
Yeah.
How do you know?
No, you don't. You don't really know it until you're actually doing your own thing and figuring that out. And once again, you just get stuck in a rut and just keep going. But it's like I said earlier, mental clarity is really important. Whether it's you go to a psychiatrist, but for me, it's running. I run every single morning, and that's kind of what clears
me
your
too.
Head.
Me too. That's why go. I was like, I was like, what time is it? I've got to do this. But yeah, I call it a mental shampoo.
Yep, and I actually think most of my dishes come from when I run every single day.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And do you see like a rotation of about a third of the menu? And like, you know, you don't want to tilt too much too fast because you all can't keep up because that precision and the sauces, all that.
Yeah, there's some things that do. They're at my mainstays that I change seasonally, change sauces, whatnot. But I do have some things that I absolutely love that you really can't get anywhere else in Charleston. But they're main staples in France as well. And I'm trying to emulate that, obviously. But I do a lot of creative work through specials and trying to push the menu in that. And if people stick to it, we put it on the menu.
That's a practical way to work on it.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. But nothing goes out without the full team's approval. And if it's not good, which rarely happens, it's definitely a full team aspect.
I am so hungry sitting in here right now because I can smell all kinds of really like rich flavors coming in from the kitchen. So I'm definitely hungry, but I want to know what's making you hungry. You know, 3 years in, what is really still percolating?
I keep going back to the word relevant, but that being relevant, staying at the forefront of cuisine, especially French cuisine in Charleston and nationally, and just putting out our best version of ourselves every day. Mm-hmm. I want guests to be just as happy. Go walking through the dining room, people like, wow, that's one of the best meals I've had, is one of a gratifying thing. It makes you want to be like, let's work harder tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And then bringing the whole team with you. That is what kind of drives you. It's a brutal industry, but once you figure out how to make everybody happy and put out the food that you want to do, it's really rewarding.
Mm-hmm. There's something calming about it, right?
It
like
is.
When you come in here, it feels calm. I mean, it's vibrant and bustling, but it doesn't feel chaotic.
No.
It feels like I'm going to be taken care of.
Exactly.
Comforting.
Yeah.
And even if I have to wait or I sit down and it takes a few minutes, I don't feel like left.
That's a great feeling.
Yeah.
That's what we love to hear.
That's a really great feeling, especially after a bad meal. And I try not to throw shade to what those meals are. But if you ever see me later and just getting a cocktail and some fries, then there's a reason for that.
I hear you.
I'm like, oh, God, I need something. So what's one aspect of being a chef that really meshes with an aspect of your personality? You touched on it maybe a little earlier.
Yeah. Growing up wanting to just cook is one aspect, but it is a physically demanding job. You stand on your feet for 10 to 12 hours a day, five to 7 days a week, you know, whoever does, everybody's got their own hours. But that is physically demanding on the body. I've been an athlete my whole life, and that's kind of, I transitioned for an athlete into cooking.
And what was your sport?
I was a lacrosse player. So lacrosse, and now I'm a full-time runner. So that kind of physical challenge is something that really struck me. It's like, I'm also very ADHD, so I need to keep my hands moving all the time. And this is a great, great way to kind of just explore your creativity and just use your hands and create something from nothing with your hands is a really cool thing at the end of the day when it actually hits the plate and you see the satisfied customer.
But also ADHD, as somebody who has it herself, it can also provide hyper-focus. So maybe that's the sauces, you know, because
maybe
you're
is.
Super focused on those, you know, and you can really delve into something like that. Yeah, I like that physical activity. And I think that we often, or at least in my generation, we're this similar generation. I don't think you're a millennial. I think you're a Generation X. Am I right?
I am, Generation X.
Yeah, me too.
Yep.
So we
40 years old. 40 years young.
Yeah. I'm a little older. I'll just leave it at that. But we basically were taught that everybody had to go to college and everybody had to learn this way. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't really that understanding until a few years later that we are different people. We have different energies and different movement. You know, like you're probably a kinetic learner. You learn through physical work and repetition,
for
and
sure.
That's how you teach. Before we go on to the next question, how do you know when you hire somebody that they're going to be teachable?
You can see it in the first hour. Whether you just give them a very simple task, and if they can do that task the exact way that you describe to them while you're standing over shoulder and watching, if they can do that, they're easily trained. Mm-hmm. It's the people that are stuck in their ways and like, oh, I know how to do it because this is the way I was told to do it. That's kind of a red flag. So you want people that are hungry, and mm-hmm. that hunger is not something that's it's inside, and it's not learned, but you want that hunger, and you want to just be able to be like, yeah, we can do it this way. Not everything is squares, circles, apples, oranges. You know, it varies every single day. There's curveballs, and you got to be able to adapt to those.
Mm-hmm. What's something keeping you up at night?
I'm so tired at the end of the day that nothing keeps me up anymore at night. I don't know. I'm pretty happy in life right now.
Good. You look happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm healthy. I'm happy. Got a great family. And we have a restaurant that has been my goal of 18 years to finally do. So nothing's keeping me up at night.
That's good.
I'm trying to figure out ways to go to sleep.
Yeah.
Or no. Yeah. To sleep more.
Yeah. To sleep more.
Exactly.
Okay. So for every Southern Fort guest, we often in the industry will talk about death row meals.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe in the death row. So I don't believe in the death penalty. And so I want to bring you some food that brings you life. So I have something called a magic picnic basket. And with it, I can time travel. I can go back in time to conscript anybody to make anything that you just wish you had one more taste of. I can cook a little bit, though I'm never going to deep fry with clarified butter. I just don't have that kind of money. And I can definitely source for you. And I'd love to bring you some of your favorite things, things that really pop into your head and you say, ooh, I wish I could have this again. And they don't have to go together. So what can I put in the basket for you?
Eating it anywhere? Anywhere.
Anywhere.
Kind of, you know, you're saying last meal kind of thing?
Yeah.
It's a good question. I like a variety of things. It's mm-hmm. kind of the way my brain is. I like small bites of lots of things. Some meals that really have stuck out. It's a long tasting menu at a Michelin 3-star restaurant, like an Alain Ducasse restaurant in Paris. Those are the kind of meals that I really, really love. Small bites of lots of different things. Things that you don't get all the time. So caviar and langoustines, a little bit of foie gras, Wagyu beef, all the opulent, the stuff that you mm-hmm. don't get. That's probably what I would want to eat. Lots of truffles.
Do you have a preference of the truffle? Are you a white or black truffle?
Well, obviously I'm partial to the French black gold, the Perigord truffle. But yeah, white truffles are amazing. Mm-hmm. But for the price point, I'll stick with Perigords right now.
That's great. Well, if people want to learn more about Maison and all the good food here, you can go to thesouthernfork.com. There are going to be links there as well as pictures of Vandy so you can see the face behind the voice. If you like what you hear, obviously this is a fun job. I eat places like that, get to know people, but I've been eating his food for, I don't know, a decade?
Probably. 12 years in 12 years in Charleston.
Yeah, so definitely over a decade. So thank you so much for spending time with me.
Thanks for having
me. Busy morning. Yeah. This is long overdue. I'm glad it's done.
Appreciate it.
Hello and welcome to Talking With My Mouthful. Since we all have French cooking on the brain after listening to Vandy talk about pommes frites and clarified butter, I wanted to share with you that Saveur magazine, one of the magazines that I contribute pretty consistently to, has a Facebook, very active Facebook cookbook club. And each month, the magazine chooses a cookbook and there's editorial around it. People cook out of it, share tricks and tips on the Facebook page. It's a lot of fun. And this month, I am helping contribute some to that editorial because the cookbook selection is The Essential Pepin, which is celebrity chef Jacques Pepin's amazing book printed in 2011 that is just filled with recipes that I am going to be cooking this month. So I'm of course, have interviewed Jacques Pepin on this show before. If you are a Facebook person, I would invite you to check out that cookbook club. It's fun to share what you're cooking and what maybe substitutions you did or regional differences. It's also great to just hear tips and tricks from other home cooks. And it's especially fun for me when I get to talk to one of the most amazing chefs about his own work. So please check that out. I will be filling my Instagram feed with some French cooking this month, but that's super aspirational of me. But at the same time, some of these recipes are super, super easy. And of course, if you haven't checked out that episode of the podcast, please pop back into the archives and do that. And of course, you want to also follow along with the Jacques Pepin Foundation on Instagram, because they share a lot of wonderful cooking videos, current videos, as well as his time cooking with Julia during their PBS series. He has so many wonderful tips and techniques, and I know that I was very calmed during the lockdown part of the pandemic by watching some of his videos, and I've heard a lot of other people say that as well. So make sure and check that out. But anyway, as always, thanks for listening, and I hope I've inspired you to go out and eat or to cook a little bit, or if nothing else, to learn a little bit more about the people who are cooking your food. I'll be right here next week with another episode. So take care.
You've been listening to The Southern Fork. I can't wait to bring you more culinary conversations, but in the meantime, I have one question. Are you going to eat all that?